Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 409 of the Roguecast, recorded March 21st, 2023. Twister Sisters. All right, we come to you from our gloomy office here in what is apparently not spring, Texas.
It's raining today.
You know, spring rain is a thing, Randy.
No, I want it to be sunny and 100 degrees.
You'll get it soon enough. You'll get it.
I mean, we might hit a record and we might go for 120 this year. Who knows?
Yeah. Death Valley temperatures, baby.
Randy,
you say that now. Just for your electric bill.
You're familiar with the D&D setting of Dark Sun?
Yes.
So I'm just saying that we're closer and closer to that every day. Soon the Thrycreen warriors will come.
It's all I'm waiting for. Dragon
and
kings.
What, cannibalistic halflings?
Cannibalistic halflings.
That ride dinosaurs?
No, that's Eberron. The halflings in Dark Sun eat people. The halflings in Eberron ride dinosaurs. And the halflings in 4th edition D&D were river people.
Let me rewind a minute. If a halfling eats a person, it's not cannibalism.
You're
that's
right.
Not a halfling.
That's true.
They gotta eat a halfling.
No, it's just bigger portions.
Right, it's a fulling?
It's a full. No, halflings eating humans, that's like eating two halflings. Still cannibalism.
I think it's that they're okay to eat people.
So you think dwarves can eat people?
Listen, like, halflings elves? Have enough going on their own. They have hairy feet. Humans don't have
but
hairy
feet. But if dwarves
feet,
eat dwarves?
Sometimes.
Dwarves eat dwarves, cannibalism. Dwarves eat elves?
Anything
not
eating itself is cannibalism. I'm glad you turned into this, by the way, listener. Please weigh in on whether a halfling eating a human is cannibalism or not. If Frodo ate Aragorn, cannibalism? No, but if he ate Sam, cannibalism.
So you're saying the orcs in Lord of the Rings, when they were eating
cannibals.
Each other, they were two different races of orcs, but they were still orcs, is that cannibalism?
Yeah, what's the difference? Is it like,
listen, halfling and human, it's not the same word.
What about
orc and orc is the same word.
What about half elf and elf? Is that half cannibalism?
But
we'll allow it.
There were orcs and Uruk-hai. Those are different. Is that still cannibalism?
It's true.
Though?
No.
It's
interesting.
So dwarves can't eat dwarves, but dwarves can eat elves.
Yes.
So okay. if the name
if
you're eating is
them.
Also yourself, then it's cannibalism. All right, okay. That's all it is. All
right. What about halflings eating people? That's just good sense.
Probably.
Yeah.
Boromir. You know he'd make a good meal.
It's true.
You know that probably after he died and they buried him, that the halfling probably went back,
yeah,
dug him up, and ate him.
They're like, what about second breakfast?
How about second board?
We're getting it one way or the other. All right. But listen, y'all, we do have some comics and movies to talk about.
We'd like to thank you for turning into the Cannibalism Fantasy Podcast.
You know, sometimes I listen to a decent number of podcasts, and I'll start, and they will start with just some bonkers shit.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, guys, move along to whatever it is you're good at. And so I'm just telling us, move along.
All right, okay, fine. some game stuff came in this week.
Yes.
We have the D&D movie is coming out next week.
Right.
And they sent us the Honor Among Thieves miniatures pack.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty cool. You got a pack of minis that's all monsters that are in the mini movie, including Owlbear, a snowy,
yep,
owlbear.
Which is their main character, Doric.
Yep. She turns into an owlbear.
Yep.
I guess
we don't want to necessarily spoil it all, but a lot of these are in the trailer.
Yeah. The Displacer Beast, the Gelatinous Cube, and another one that I wish I didn't know.
Yeah, because it's not in the trailer, but it is, they've been revealing it through,
yeah,
like, the D&D website.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, it's the nature of this work. I'm going to occasionally get spoiled on things.
Get rid of this entire week. You're going to get tons of spoilers.
I probably am.
I don't know that there's, like, I don't know there's a lot of story spoilers. I think it's all just, like, little sort of Easter egg spoilers, and that's not that I don't really care too much about that, although don't come in and tell us that.
Yeah, well, I'd rather not know any of it.
But also, do see the D&D movie.
Yes.
Like, I think that this is, like, if we're going to get a shot at any RPG movies, this is kind of the one. It's got a big star attached. It looks good.
We should say, I think we have a division amongst us here, which never happens. We're always on one mind. Dave, I think, is a little worried, skeptical, that this is going to be a big hit.
Oh, this is only sales-wise. Like, I think I'm going to like it.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I think you're worried that it's going to become a Firefly, like a cult hit.
Yeah, you remember with Serenity, like, all the fans were so hyped for Serenity, and then it flopped at the theater.
Yeah, I think this is different. I think Nick and I are both thinking this is going to be a big crossover hit.
I think this is going to capture people who don't know what D&D is or tangentially know what D&D is.
Capture them like in the Lattice Cube.
Yeah, 100%.
You're saying that some teenage couple is going to go see a movie called D&D Honor Among Thieves. They're going to say those words at the ticket counter.
Yeah.
Yep. Honor Among Thieves.
Yep. They're going to say that. No, what they're going to say is, hey, I want to see the D&D movie.
That's not the dumbest thing people have asked for tickets for.
Dude.
Ballistic X versus Severin.
They were looking for M3 again a few months ago, all right?
I got my eye on you, M3.
Mainly because, A, I think the box office is taking a huge bounce back. People are wanting to go back to the movies in like droves at this point. D&D is going to... I don't know what else is coming out that week, but I feel like this is going to be...
They definitely cleared the way.
It's going to be the blockbuster of the weekend. It'll win the weekend.
Like tactically, just like D&D players take on a monster.
Yep.
But I'm hoping that's the case. I would like to for it to take off. And I think it has the potential to, because we know, like, for all that I think they're going to make it work, it does look like they took a cue or two from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure.
The trailer, if nothing else, had the same mixture of action and humor and what looks like maybe some heart sneaking around in there, but also, like rock and roll soundtrack and stuff.
Yeah, Dev, I think you are... And
Guardians of the Galaxy was a crossover hit.
You are being the wide-eyed skeptic, whereas I, as always, am a Blue Sky optimist.
I just wanted to do well so we can get the Paramount Plus TV show that they promised.
Well, we all want it to do well. Yeah. The question is whether it's going to do well. And I do worry that Dave is right. That Dave is right to be skeptical.
People love dragons. There's going to be multiple dragons.
They've gotten their fill of dragons from Game of Thrones.
If they had called this Top Gun...
But they're not going to get a fat dragon like this movie is going to deliver.
There's no chonky dragons in that. Yeah. If they had called this Top Gun Maverick versus Elves, I think it probably would have done better. I think to your point about Honor Among Thieves.
Also, do you think Chris Pine is big enough that he can open a movie?
I don't know.
I love Chris Pine.
It's been a little while since 2009 Star Trek, but he is a name, though. I think he is enough to potentially do it.
Yeah.
It's not like Chris Pratt was some big name when Guardians of the Galaxy hit.
It's true.
They actually have more... Chris Pine is a bigger name.
Is Chris Pine the biggest Chris?
The biggest Chris,
not size wise. We know that Hemsworth is the biggest.
Is
Point Break? Yes, but I mean, is he the best Chris?
No, Chris Evans is the best Chris.
Oh, that's true, Chris.
Yeah, it's hard to deny.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
He embodied Cap, and on screen, and like in real life, he seems pretty Cap like too.
Chris Pine is a runner up.
Yeah, he's definitely the second.
Who's the worst Chris?
Chris Pratt is the worst Chris.
Yeah.
Although he is not officially a Chris anymore. He's been de-Chrised.
He's a Christopher.
Christopher Eccleston?
Chris Rock.
Chris Rock.
Christopher Eccleston, yeah, he's kind of got like a jerk thing going on behind the scenes. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so there's some lower tier Chris's. Get with the Dave program,
and, and of course... Chris Cross. Christopher Cross.
the mellow 70s singer.
That's right.
That we're talking about.
He's got a dark side.
Isn't there the artist Chris Cross, too?
Yes. No, those are with K's, though. That's a different Chris.
Oh, that's a different
guy. And he's a good artist.
And they're both dead.
Oh, no!
Or at least one. I don't know if it's Chris and Cross are both dead, but one of them's dead.
Okay. Well, that's more sad.
We also got the Spider-Man Beyond miniatures game, which is the starter for the HeroClix... it's got a pretty good selection. It's got Miles and Peter and Silk and some other people in it. It's like a good little starter.
Does it have bad guy dudes too?
It does have some bad guys as well. And it's got maps and rules and all that kind of stuff. If you're looking for HeroClix, they finally have starters again.
We were talking earlier, HeroClix, which has been kind of with the store since we opened in like 2001.
Yep.
Clix have been a big thing for us early on.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, kind of lost the ability to host them when we filled the store up with stuff during the pandemic. But otherwise, had been almost, it seems like running almost nonstop HeroClix in-store games for like, 15 years
or something. It's running for a long time. Yep.
It was a long time. And it's had a resurgence lately. So if you have not... if you have not played it, look into it on YouTube, check it out, and perhaps try it out, because there's some good starter sets right now.
Yeah, and they're about to do the new lines, like Iconic Moments HeroClix. Yeah.
In short, if you don't know what it is, it's like a little miniature game where you build superhero teams of like varying sizes. You can choose the point size, heroes and villains, and you can cross them over, Marvel or DC ones, and you fight them out. It's fun.
It's a good collection of villains. It's Venom, Shocker, Hydra Man, Mysterio... And it looks like maybe Boomerang?
That's weird.
It's all Hydro Man.
Hydro Man, yeah. What, how did Hydro Man get in there?
Look, like, Do not knock Hydro Man. Hydro Man is cool.
He's been in the Sinister Six
yes,
at times.
Yes, he is.
No.
As has, I think Boomerang has been in the Sinister Six as well.
Boomerang is also the he headed up the, like, Sinister Syndicate.
And was that's what I was thinking of.
Superior Foes, yeah.
And also, I have always liked Hydro Man more than Sandman, so.
You just like Waterverse more than sand.
I do.
You're like Anakin.
In that respect, I hate Sam. I'm exactly.
And she's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "I hate this Super Spider-Man villain, Sandman. He's the worst. He owes me $5."
And then Padme was like, "Me too.
Me too.
Let's get him.
Let's get married secretly."
And that's how the Jedi fell.
That's how the Jedi fell. If only Sandman had been less of a lame villain. We got, speaking of lame villains, not lame villains, we got Marvel Villainous Twisted Ambition, which is the newest Marvel Villainous. I noticed Doc Ock, because he's on the front of it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It's got a couple others as well. I don't remember who all's in it.
Yep, but, the Villainous series is quite the popular series.
It is, and each one is a standalone, but you can also combine them. The only one that's not stolen is the Venom one you have to buy and like play separately.
Okay.
Yeah. And we got from Kickstarter a couple games, Excavation Earth, in which you are aliens trying to dig up artifacts on a fallen Earth.
Yep, that seems like a fun idea.
Yep. It's got a pretty cool... It's a Kickstarter bundle, so it's got, like, the expansion and some bonus stuff and all that kind of thing. And then we got a game called Steam Up, which is... You're all familiar with, like, Bao, like a dim sum kind of...
It's one of the most delicious things on the planet.
Yes. So they come in those little bamboo little crate things.
Yep.
So this has little bamboo things, and you put plastic ingredients in to build different dim sum dishes.
Oh, that's fun.
It's got a little Lazy Susan you use. It's a very cool thematic-looking game. I've not played the game itself, but it looks very cool, and I'm excited to play it.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Also, the first person to buy it gets a squishy bow as their first player token.
It's so cool looking. So. You're going to want to just go ahead and do it.
Yep. All right. Let's talk comics for March 22nd, 2023. There are a lot of them.
There are. It's a big week.
Big week. Pretty good week.
It is a Tom Taylor Tuesday. It is technically a Jade McKay Tuesday.
Jade McKay Tuesday.
There is nothing from Ryan North.
Shall we start with one of the big ones?
Tom Taylor Tuesday. So, first of all, there are new issues of Nightwing and Deceased War of the Undead Gods, both of which are really good.
Yep.
Deceased is the penultimate issue of that.
Is that the finale, essentially, of the Deceased series?
It will be the finale of the Deceased series.
Yes. Yes. I'm sure they'll probably do some follow-up one day or another.
The end of the five-part trilogy.
That wraps it up, yes.
But this is also the final issue of the Batman One Bad Day series of one-shots.
Yeah, each one spotlighted a villain. They're all slightly out of continuity, so they can kind of do big stories that are sometimes show you, like, the final days of a villain or their master scheme unleashed or whatever.
There have been some good ones.
And, you know, I have to say, as a villain, Ra's al Ghul is not a guy who is high on my list. He's cool. I like him. But there's, like, almost all Batman villains I like better.
He was the star of the first Batman graphic novel I ever bought, so he's kind of held a cool place in my heart.
I mean, I should take that back. Ra's al Ghul is actually a really good villain, but the fact that Tom Taylor got him, I was a little skeptical of it. I was like, why couldn't he have gotten Mr. Freeze or Clayface or something? I just kind of like those guys innately better. And then he goes and does, like, the best Batman One Bad Day in this issue.
I really like the Bane one.
This one's better.
The Bane one was trash compared to this.
This is easily the best one on Bad Day. And
I wouldn't spit on the Bane one to put out a fire on it.
Can we say Ivan Rice is doing the art? It's really, really nice.
It is. This is a story that within a few pages had me pretty sympathetic to Ra's al Ghul.
In fact, I think, Dave, that may be the only argument against it. Maybe too sympathetic to Ra's al Ghul, because as I read this, I'm like, Batman's wrong. He's flat out wrong in this.
You know how in recent times we've perhaps become more aware that characters with motivations like, say, Killmonger or Poison Ivy in the Batman world,
they might not be the bad guys.
They might not be the bad guys.
The defending the status quo might not always be the most heroic thing.
They usually kind of, what they'll do is, they did this kind of to Saw Gerrera. They've done him a little dirty in Rogue One, too. Yep. They'll just be like, he's a crazy extremist. If only they were all a little less extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, maybe.
Yeah.
But this one does walk that line of asking about the extremes. But it's interesting. Like, I'm going to actually sort of say how it begins. Ra's al Ghul has, like, this aging wolf that's dying that he has a connection with. And it's kind of interesting because he's always been sort of a you know, defend the planet. They kind of rebuilt him somewhat as like, I mean, I guess he was kind of always was like
he
a bit
was
of
always
an,
the environmentalist.
An environmental kind of eco-terrorist guy sometimes is how they would do it.
Yeah.
You know, with the we have to cleanse the planet. But it's rare to show him having a personal connection to anything. It was always kind of an abstract thing. Like, oh, why does he feel this way? Well, because there's too many people and there's overpopulation.
Taylor gives
blah,
him
blah,
a
blah.
Reason why.
Taylor yeah. gives him a reason why that actually dates back to, you know, this guy has been reborn through the Lazarus Pit many times, and so he's hundreds and hundreds of years old. And you see, it opens with a sequence where you see a wolf save him, actually during, like, a sort of a siege of, like, a city in, like, sort of medieval times. And it just kind of, you get the sense of the connection he has to it. And then you cut to a modern thing where you have this, like, wolf that's, like, the last of his kind and, like, his pet that's dying. Mm-hmm. And he has to sort of, like, be there as it's put down. And it's a brutal sequence.
It is.
But it will immediately, like, God, if you're a pet owner, you're, like, kind of like, well, all right, I'm with your hero, Ray, right, Raz. I still call him Ra's al Ghul because of the cartoons.
Yeah, me too.
I like that. It sounds so cool.
It is.
And since it's all made up anyway, I don't know how much it's really steeped in Arabic
no,
language.
No, it's Constantine.
No!
It is funny. The eco-terrorists, I feel like that was a thing that was definitely done in the 80s when we were all Reaganites.
Yeah, we're like...
And everyone was like,
these guys
oh,
need
damn,
to pipe down.
Calm it down, eco-warriors. And of course now, 40 years later, the planet's on fire. And we're like, you know what? Ra's al Ghul and Poison Ivy were right. They should have been killing people this whole time.
Yes. There is something to that. But, yeah. Yes, this takes you on a journey that, you know, will sort of... it tests... you see it mostly from his point of view, but sometimes you'll see it from the perspective of Batman and Damian.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They have their own... and, of course, Damian has a connection. Raz is his grandfather.
Yep.
And, you know, big stuff goes down.
You yeah. see that Batman is just... centrally focused on keeping people alive to the detriment of
the thing is, yes. I almost feel like I get what he's doing, but I almost feel like Ra's really there need to be some counter from Batman because he does. I mean, Batman is 100% in the wrong the whole time. Like, there's no question that Ra's is doing a sort of like
he's not wrong that people well, shouldn't be killed.
He is wrong about these people.
the thing is, like this is what I was saying off mic earlier. It's like. The reason we can, like, work with vigilantism in comics and stuff is because, like, it doesn't come with the negative side effects that it comes with in the real world, where people decide that somebody is a bad person who needs to be taken out, and you're like, well, that's a coup d'etat, or that's that Kyle Rittenhouse kid running yeah. around machine-gunning yeah. people, or the... Who was the husband and wife with the, like, M16s
oh, yeah,
during the pandemic
yep, yep.
or whatever? Like, I'm like, you don't want to just, like, start, like, saying, well, yeah, we should really just cut loose and do that. But every once in a while, it's nice to imagine that a secret manipulative grandmaster of crime could do the right thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is that so wrong to have a grandmaster of crime? anyway, it's a compelling story with
really
good art. And lots of fun heartfelt moments at times.
Doctor Strange gets a relaunch this week. It is Jed McKay who has been writing it since the death of Doctor Strange.
Right.
If we were doing picks this week, this would be my pick.
Really?
So I really enjoyed it.
He came in on the death of Doctor Strange, right?
So he came in after Jason Aaron had done his sort of revamp of him, which he introduced the ghost dog that Dave hates.
Yes. Doctor Strange is obviously a cat person.
It's you know, keep your cat propaganda off our podcast.
He could be a lover of both cats and dogs.
He can, but he is more of a cat person, and it was a ridiculous
this
call.
Dog talks.
Everybody loves the ghost beagle, Dave, except for you.
Big screw up. anyway. So he did the death of Doctor Strange, and then he did the mini series or maxi series that followed it called Strange, where Doctor Strange's frequent love interest Clea
and wife, she's his wife now,
became Sorcerer Supreme in his absence,
mm-hmm.
and that was good. And so now Doctor Strange was revived. They never, you know, I'll say this. I felt like they were always pretty upfront with the fact, like, she was literally in communication with him from day one in the afterlife.
Yeah.
She's like, we're going to get you back.
Yeah.
So this wasn't one of those, like, oh, they tried to make us think he was dead. And, like,
they knew from the outset.
Yeah. And that's how it should be with Doctor Strange. It's like, this is not a guy you can easily take down.
Yeah.
I love married couple, the Stranges.
Yes. That's pretty
good.
There's great banter back and forth. I always forget that Clea is the niece of Dormammu.
Yeah, she comes from like a sort of more of a conqueror people.
Well, and they call her the warlord of
the warlord of Manhattan.
Warlord of Manhattan. This is a bit where Doctor Strange just gets back to life now, and he's talking to Luke Cage, who's now the mayor,
yeah.
And he's like, "Hey, can you tell your wife's followers to back off? They keep calling me the false king."
and that's what I loved about it. There was all these interactions with the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. It's kind of, by the way, just structure-wise, a day in the life.
Yeah,
it's a week in the life.
Yeah, taking each day. And he consults with, you know, She-Hulk and Spider-Man and Daredevil while doing other things, too. And it felt really cool.
Well, McKay positions, I thought it was interesting, he basically talks about being a consulting doctor.
Yeah.
And he's explained to Clea that it's like, when you go to the doctor, you know, if you go, like, you go to a specialist.
Yeah.
So he is a specialist in magic. So if the superheroes need to deal with magic, they consult Doctor Strange.
Right.
Like, that's a great little pitch for him.
Yep. And I, like, that's actually the kind of, arguably the Doctor Strange I wanted, in part because I usually see him best as a supporting character where he comes in, he helps other people with magic. I'm not always super into his solo adventures. But I will say, this is a very good first issue. Nick, I know that when he's explaining the consulting doctor thing to Clea, this leads to one of the more amusing moments. She notices that this is similar to how Moon Knight just reestablished himself as a consulting, investigator, like, detective.
Like, "You open your door for those who require your aid, laudable. Didn't Moon Knight just do that?" And he says, "Divorce!"
Which also doesn't Scarlet Witch do the same exact thing?
Yes.
It's just like all the magic people are opening
their magic doors.
Yep.
Also, we can't ignore the art. Pascal Ferry.
Oh, Pascal Ferry's great here.
I don't remember the last time I saw him. I always relegate him to the Adam Strange artist
that, like, put him on the map for us. And that was like 20 years ago.
Yes.
By the way, that was some great art.
It was.
By the way, he did a fantastic redesign of Adam Strange,
which was very large, like, action adventure. This one is a little bit more quiet and,
you know,
kind of like
Adam. That Adam Strange thing was also had. Remember, especially like the first issue, he was like didn't even remember who he was.
Right, right. No, I mean there's
quiet stuff in there,
but he excels at some of the quiet moments here. I thought he did.
There's also a backup story by Jed McKay with a different artist, Andy McDonald, that features the Psycho Zeppelin of the Freaky Dr. Z.
Yeah,
and involved. This is basically Wand, which is the magic division of S.H.I.E.L.D. that he introduced in Strange. Has been stripped down to just the director of Wand and Wong, and they are rebuilding this magic shield thing. Dave, I know you're not a fan of this concept.
Correct.
I really enjoyed it, and I like this backup quite a bit.
I mean, it's a little zany, and it almost feels like they're trying to recruit Grant Morrison to their...
Yeah, a little bit, but it was fun.
I also don't like Wong wearing a shield outfit. Not everybody is an agent of
S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a Wand outfit, Dave.
From S.H.I.E.L.D. despite that, some of the stuff, like, bordered a little too zany for me, but like, overall, this issue is I think one of the most approachable Doctor Strange first issues I've ever read. It's like, despite the fact that, like, some of the, there's lighter stuff where he's consulting with superheroes, but there is a serious one where there's a guy who's, like, almost essentially, he's like enslaving these refugees.
Yeah.
And they have to go and, like, kind of drop the hammer on him, but Strange is trying to sort of do it in a way that's sort of, he's kind of trying to do the,
diplomacy,
and Clea's like, "I will wreck him." and it's fun seeing them have to kind of work with each other on that.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I'll say, Doctor Strange has a long history of being kind of dry.
Right.
And that is the thing I will say that has not been the case with McKay. I think his sort of, his more
sensibilities
work. I have
to agree, even if it's not quite what I want, is that having some lightness in there works, I think. I think he's pretty good at it. I think anybody who has, like, even the slightest curiosity about Doctor Strange should go ahead and try this one out.
Yeah, it's worth a read. We have the Milestone 30th Anniversary Special, which it's one of their multi-story anthology things. And this has some great hooks. We talked about this, Dave. That's like the main story, the first story is about the Milestone Universe from 1993 crossing over to the Milestone Universe of 2021 and seeing how they
differ. Sort of reinterpreted one in the modern times. They also had Static Batman Beyond again.
Static Beyond, which is an older Static.
Which was actually, that occurred in the cartoons, right?
Yes,
they actually, like, Static was in the Justice League of Batman Beyond's era.
So this is set in the future of the DC Animated Universe. So this is in continuity with that.
Nice.
Then there's Icon Forever, which is, there's a series in 2010 called Milestone Forever, which established the future of 1993 Milestone, and Raquel Irvin, a.k.a. Rocket, became Icon.
Yep.
So this is her story.
Yep, seeing then, her grow up to be Rocket is a cool idea.
Then there is an epilogue to Blood Syndicate, which actually never really... I think this is a epilogue to the series that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's and then there's a preview of the new Static Up All Night graphic novel that's going to be coming out, which I think is more of the sort of like the YA all ages take on it. But yeah. it's a good selection of Milestone stuff.
Yeah, fiction.
There's DC's Legion of Bloom, another one of these anthology books. This one has
They do the seasonal ones.
Spring themed.
Yes, it's spring themed.
So there's a Batman story, a Blue Beetle and the Florida Man story. Titans
and
West,
the
Superman,
what man?
Florida Man.
What is that?
It's called Florida Man.
Oh, okay.
Titans West, Wonder Woman, Superman, Swamp Thing, Poison Ivy, of course, and Captain Carrot.
For a minute, I thought you said the Floronic Man, and I was like, oh, that's, you know, Poison Ivy, Floronic Man, sure.
And I know none of us are big Captain Carrot fans.
The art was in that.
Check out the art. It's
I know.
So
I was looking at it. It's really good.
It's sort of a fake animated kind of style. And it's like he's fighting
fake animated. That sounds so derisive.
Is this the same Captain Carrot that showed up in Multiversity?
Probably.
Oh, I was a fan of that.
All right. Another anthology from Marvel. This is their Women of Marvel for Women's History Month. It has a loosely connected... The framing story is She-Hulk is arguing in court against this big jerk. And as they go, they're telling stories of various characters. There's Black Cat and Silk. America Chavez and Kate Bishop,
mm-hmm.
Monica Rambeau and Miss Marvel, Wasp.
It's a good lineup of characters.
The thing I loved this the Silk is a Korean character.
Yeah,
and I love that their story is in a Korean karaoke bar.
Oh, nice!
Black Cat and Silk go to a Korean karaoke bar, and they disturb their neighbor who is also singing karaoke, and that is Mysterio. And nice. So he decides to have some fun with them, and they defeat him with the power of karaoke. It's fun. So this is a fun little anthology thing. Superman number 2 comes out this week. We were all very gung-ho on Superman number 1. This is Josh Williamson and is it Jamal Campbell that's the artist?
This follows the parasite appeared in the first one, but there's like a particular strange plague of like little parasite clones. They're like child size,
yeah,
like little child versions of parasite. And there is kind of a neat vibe to the issue where like they've been sapping energy not just from Superman but from the whole city.
Yeah,
so the city is like in a complete blackout. And I think Randy, you know, we were talking about how dark the coloring is in places.
It was meant to be.
I believe it is meant to evoke literally how dark it was, which I think is kind of a neat idea, actually. You know, actual blackouts are kind of creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
Even partial blackouts or just losing power can be weird. So I think that was the vibe on it.
I thought it was a good second issue. I liked the evolution of Parasite and mm-hmm. sort of this new version of him.
They also introduce a new character who's like one of these, like somewhere between an enemy and an ally, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Marilyn Moonlight. Yep.
She's got a cool look.
She got a cool look, yeah. She kind of shows up and he's like, what?
And then also sort of a new...
And he's also working, it's kind of neat, he is working with like the super team to kind of quell problems, you know, take yep. care of Parasite stuff in the city. So he's like... It's like, what, his son, Supergirl,
yeah.
anybody who's,
the
like, kind of in...
War World twins.
Yeah. They're all out there doing stuff.
And there's
stuff.
A little more about sort of the conclave of villains that are kind of cropping up, which I
right.
thought was interesting
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
All in all, I think Williamson is doing a really good job with and kind of building Superman back to a book that I'm really excited to read.
It's been a bit.
There's a couple reprints this week in the sort of their Marvel's oversized format. There's Avengers Rage of Ultron, which is the Rick Remender graphic novel reprinted. It's basically a big thing. It's a big Ultron story versus the Avengers. And then also a reprint of the classic Avengers number 9, right?
Yeah, the first appearance of Wonder Man. Is there any particular reason they're reprinting that now?
I mean, there was a Wonder Man series on the horizon, but I'm not really sure.
Huh. Maybe this is one of those things where they know something that they're not saying yet, or maybe they just wanted to reprint the first appearance of Wonder Man.
Or also, there could be an Ultron Wonder Man story coming, as far as we know, in the Marvel stuff. You know?
I
mean, actually, we don't know what McKay's doing in Avengers, so...
That's true. Anyway, I read this. I had read it before, once upon a time, in some, like, Marvel Masterworks or something, but it had been decades, maybe?
Yeah.
It is a slightly ridiculous story, but, like, these reprints are always fun to read. I forgot, like, as presented originally, you know, later they would have it where Simon Williams is, like, a wannabe actor and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But here he was, like, an investor who was, like, felt wronged by some Stark tech or right. whatever that, like, you know, like, he accidentally infringed on the copyright and he was, like, going to go to jail. And Baron Zemo bails him out like he does.
Sure, he's always out there doing good.
And then he's like, hey, I can help you get some payback on these guys. And he convinces him to undergo some experiments, which turn him into a superhero, with which he... And then they blackmail him to infiltrate the Avengers and destroy them from within.
It's happened to all of us.
It's happened to all of us. Sometimes you're in jail one day, you're like, can somebody bail me out?
And some guy in a purple mask glued to his face shows up, and he's like, I can help you. And you're
he's
like, well...
He's like, just join me, the Enchantress, the Executioner, yeah. and we will help you out.
And you're like, well, I really don't want to spend another night in jail.
Yes. Also, the Enchantress is pretty.
It's true.
So she should be good to hang out with.
Yeah.
a lot of upsides to joining the Masters of Evil.
There are. Nobody talks about it.
Yeah. You know, Executioner's a good conversationalist.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably.
If you want to talk about axes, that guy knows about axes.
I will fell things. anyway, but yeah, if you want to see the somewhat over-the-top Silver Age origin of Wonder Man, there it is.
We have another big anthology week, by the way. Another sort of small anthology, Pop's Chocolate Shop of Horrors. This is Archie's stuff.
Yeah.
And it is a... There's like three or four different stories about... centered around Pop's, his malt shop. And the horrors there.
I did not know that they were still doing the Archie horror crossovers. Yeah. I thought they had kind of wrapped those, but there's apparently Pop's Chocolate Shop yet to have its day.
Right, right. Well, we have yet to see Moose come into his own in the horror genre either. So
that's true. Hopefully it's going to be a horrific found footage
yes.
thing.
Jim Starlin, the guy who created Thanos, among other things.
Yep.
And... Star Fox? Did he make Star Fox?
Star Fox, yes. I was trying to remember if he created the Infinity Gauntlet or if that was somebody else
I
who did it.
That was him.
I think it was him.
But he's responsible for shaping a lot of Marvel's cosmic stuff. He basically has a new sort of space opera series from Dark Horse called Order and Outrage.
Yep, with Rags Morales on art.
Yep.
And, yeah.
If you groove on the particular cosmic vibe of those Thanos stories he does... Or you read Infinity Gauntlet, liked it, and just want to kind of see one of his other ones. What was his other book? Dreadstar?
Yeah.
Back in the
yeah.
day. If you were a Dreadstar person, check it out.
It says he co-created Thanos, Drax, Gamora, Nebula, and Shang-Chi.
Huh.
Oh, interesting. I did not know he had Shang-Chi. A role in that.
Boom has a new book called The Neighbors. That is another sort of like weird horror...
It's a little American Horror Story vibes yeah. about a couple moving into a new neighborhood and finding that their neighbors are maybe not the most normal of people.
Yeah.
it was an interesting first.
Our neighbors are Abby Normal.
It's got it's got really nice art as always with the Boom books.
Yeah.
There's a new Image book called Dead Romans. This is a story. This is based on a true story, Dave. It's like a
From what I read, there's like a Germanic tribe, you know, from those days. That I think that the Romans were pushing hard on, and I gather, you know, at least in this one incident, they served up the Romans hard and killed something like 50,000 Romans in this forest in, like, this massive slaughter. And this is the exciting story of how it happened. I believe told from the, I think he wanted to kind of dig in and figure out, like, not just, this isn't like some military story, but I think he wanted to get into the characters, like the tribal warlord or whatever who was the guy behind
this. This centers around it looks like a Roman, but maybe he's someone who's betrayed them to the Germans, and his lover, a slave that he is trying to get free to marry. Yep. Lots of trades this week. We've got Creepshow, the horror anthology that I think y'all were fans of.
Yeah, it was good.
Dead Lucky, the latest in the Massiverse. This is their...
it's like military person turned...
Right, she can control electricity.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a new Overwatch series called New Blood that's basically about... it's Cole Cassidy, who is their cowboy guy.
Yep.
Going around recruiting Pharah... And Zarya and a bunch of other characters. So it's like
that's just like an OGN.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even see that really.
There is the Guardians of the Galaxy by Donny Cates, which is the entire 12-issue run that he did, with, along with an annual that started with the notion that Thanos had been killed by Gamora, and that maybe he had somehow implanted himself in someone, and it was like...
That's a really good run.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a good run. There's the third of Jed McKay's Moon Knight, which features the annual with Werewolf by Night, which is what finally got Dave into the book.
It's true.
But there's also just really good stuff in there. Spider-Punk, which I really enjoyed. A world set in the alternate Spider-Punk, where Norman Osborn is the fascistic president.
I have a question about the Moon Knight book.
Yeah.
Is McKay doing anything to revitalize his Rogues Gallery? Because
He's definitely been doing more with a handful of bad guys.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then Star Trek Aliens, which is a series of one-shots that focus on the Ferengi, the Klingons, the people with the Trill.
Trills, yep.
Yep. And I feel like there's one more.
Andorians?
Maybe there's only three.
Ooh.
I thought there were those four. Maybe
the Andorians.
Three. But anyway, it's a...
You will pay for this, says the Andorian Council.
Oh, wait, there's Klingons, too.
You said Klingons.
Oh. Andorians are even more angry.
Yeah, that's it. There's three one-shots. Klingons, Ferengi, and Trill.
Okay, yeah, they were, like, oversized.
Yep. Slander!
Yep. And I guess... I guess the Andorians can go screw.
Randy, but speaking of the Blue Andorians, I just wanted to mention there is the second issue. I don't know if we mentioned this, of Blue Book.
Oh, yeah.
Which actually also is about aliens. Yeah. That was James Tinian's kind of true tales of UFO, American UFO lore, and telling the story of the, what's their name? The Blanks. The family. The Barney and Betty Hill. Sort of somewhat famous is, like, I think the first big abductee case.
Okay.
But, you know, as people, we talked a little bit about the first issue when it came out, somewhat notable that it was an interracial couple, which was, you know, would have been pretty notable in the, 50s, I think. Hard times now sometimes, much, much harder times then.
Yeah.
He's... he continues his telling of these strange events of their drive home one time.
And then in the backup, there's always another little truth.
Yeah, this one's called The Green Children.
It's like 15th century Ireland or something? Yeah.
Yep.
Creepy.
And then, if you're feeling spendy, and I was, the Savage Avengers Omnibus comes out this week. This collects all of Jerry Dugan's run, where Conan and a variety of sort of hardcore Marvel characters, from Punisher to Venom to those guys...
All the edgy guys that Marvel, the Randy always likes best.
Yeah, you know. Fight Kulan Goth.
Yep.
And there is, in fact, a Kulan Goth changes the world into his Conan-esque world again.
Yep.
Nod to the X-Men. It's a really good story that I thought had a nice, solid ending, so you can read. It's all one big story.
Mm-hmm. Who's writer?
That is Jerry Duggan.
Jerry Duggan, right.
Yeah. All right. I think that is comics for the week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some news. All right, we've got a variety of news here. I think the biggest one is we're going to start with. James Gunn has confirmed that he is going to direct Superman Legacy.
Yep. Surprising no one.
We knew he was writing it at this point.
And his producing partner, Peter Safran, was begging him to direct it, and so he decided to direct it.
I mean, I feel like this was a foregone conclusion.
So James Gunn has previously made two Guardians of the Galaxy movies, Peacemaker TV show, Suicide Squad movie.
Yep.
What else is James
Gunn? Slither,
Super.
Super, which was like a kind of a super dark superhero send-up, I believe.
And then a bunch of stuff for Troma.
Right.
I feel like there was one more that he did that was...
He wrote the Dawn of the Dead remake in 2004, but did not direct that.
So
the
conversation I've seen around this has been generally good. Like people want it to be good, except the people who are Superman at James Gunn because he didn't have Henry Cavill as Superman.
Yeah,
but the rational people.
Yep, I'm sure. So there's got to be some Snyder heads that are upset.
Those are most of the Snyder heads, I think.
Oh, okay.
But the reasonable people, I think, are generally in sort of this is a good idea, but can James Gunn do Superman?
Right. We talked about this. Like, can James Gunn do Hart? Yes.
He can.
Has he ever done Hart with anybody except for scoundrel-type characters? No,
that's
not exactly.
Yeah, I don't think he has.
So that would be him stretching his wings. He said the story has to do something with his dual origins of Kansas and Krypton.
He said All Star Superman.
A little nervous,
sort of,
but
he said that All Star Superman is sort of the touchstone for him, which is a good sign.
Yep. But I also don't know, like, if like All Star Superman, I don't know how well that would like say translate to filmic concepts.
I think elements of it could.
I don't think he's making All Star Superman.
No, he's not.
That's just the vibe, and I think that is the correct vibe to go for.
But even that vibe is a kind of an odd one. It was like modern slash Silver Age vibe. It was an odd tone that only probably Grant Morrison could easily pull off.
But I have to imagine that what he means by that is that scene where Superman rescues a girl whose therapist didn't show up on time.
Right. That,
like that Superman is the always there to save you guys.
Right. And also the Superman who's, like, so super comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah.
Who's, like, not... he's not super angsty Superman.
Right.
He's a little corny.
He's a little corny. He's also, like... I remember that, like, he's very chill about Batman in it.
Yeah.
Lois is like, hey, I heard you and Batman had a team up. How'd that go? And she's like, how's Batman? And he's like, oh, you know Batman. He's great.
It's great. Also, the one thing I'd really like them to do is what All Star Superman did right, which was they nailed the whole origin in one page.
I think they'll do it.
Like, just doing the credits.
I bet that they will do that. In fact, I think that probably there's been a decent bit of pressure to do that and not retell the origin again. Yeah. Please, you know, don't put
is
Russell Crowe in a semi-starring role in the movie.
Will this be the first new DC movie that hits?
Yes. This is the start of the epistle.
I think this is smart basically he can set the tone.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yes, he's in charge.
Don't screw this one up.
But, right,
my
I mean, it's put your money where your mouth is.
The amount of pressure.
Yeah, because, you know, like, when Iron Man came out, there wasn't a high amount of pressure. It was just like...
Another crap superhero movie. Yeah,
right, it's like, this is actually pretty good. They could build on this. Interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one, it's like, it's with all of that hindsight 2020, and it's like, this is the brick that's going to hold up or not the entire structure.
Yep.
Well, they've gotten about 10 years worth of Superman stories to not do because that's not how you do Superman. So he's got a blooper.
You didn't think it was very Superman when Jimmy Olsen was executed by a terrorist?
No, not so much.
So Superman. So Superman. Anyway, yeah. That's where I am. I'm like, I'm a little worried just in the sense of like that's a tough task for anybody.
Yeah,
James Gunn is. Shown he's got some chops, though. I think he's, in some ways, got as good a chance of doing it as anybody, even if that's not been his specialty.
Yep.
So, man, I hope you do it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Taylor Sheridan, who owns Paramount Plus, basically.
Yeah.
Definitely has a controlling stock in it.
the shows.
He makes Yellowstone, 1883, 1923. He has a spinoff of Yellowstone, or they're calling it a spinoff. Called Bass Reeves, that is about Bass Reeves, the first black deputy U.S. Marshal operating west of the Mississippi.
I feel like this is perfect.
And for those who like watched the Watchmen show on HBO, they sort of suggested that he was almost like he in the Watchmen universe, something that Alan Moore had, I think, not done, that he was kind of Bass Reeves was the real-world first superhero. And in fact, in real life, he may have been, or it seems like was at least a partial inspiration for the Lone Ranger story. So, you know, kind of like a first modern, like sort of a first American type superhero. It's a cool idea.
Yeah.
And so this would, I guess, we'll zero in on the real guy.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure Hollywood up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure thing. But like Taylor Sheridan, he's not like big, crazy. He's kind of realistic, right? Isn't that his
thing? Yeah, for the most part. I mean, there's definitely...
A little soap opera-y?
A little soap opera-y, but if they put the same spin that they have on all the Yellowstone properties, I think this is going to be very good.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And just kind of opening up people's minds to that this actually happened, because I think a lot of people don't.
You know, like, one thing that, like, is... You know, because of American Westerns, we really use it to build up ourselves... and try to tie ourselves to Western mythology, but that also meant like really leaning into sort of white supremacy sometimes. I don't mean literally like all those old Westerns were white supremacists, but they really showcased white people in the Old West.
Oh, yeah.
When in fact there was lots of black folks, lots of Mexicans, lots of Chinese people. There's the Old West was much more of a tapestry, I think, than sometimes they showed it. And I would hope that this show can kind of remedy that.
Yeah.
And they've got their lead is David David Oyelowo.
Oh,
Who is he voiced Agent Callus in Star Wars Rebels? But you've seen him. The thing he was most notable in, I think, that he was in Selma.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he has been in a variety. He was in the Les Miserables TV series as Javert. Yeah, he played Martin Luther King in Selma.
Does ACAB include Bass Reeves?
It might.
It might.
Anyway, he's been in a ton of stuff.
Honestly, I imagine that is going to be an issue that the show will grapple with.
Probably so.
Yeah.
It's also going to have Dennis Quaid, who's going to play the another U.S. Marshal.
Okay. Dennis Quaid seems like a guy who could play a U.S. Marshal.
Always liked Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
And
Dennis Quaid is not a young pup anymore.
No, he's not.
No. But he would fit into that kind of craggy western.
Absolutely.
Kind of.
Absolutely.
Also going to have Barry Pepper playing the leader of the 1st Cherokee Mounted Rifles.
Sure.
Well, he's got a...
the role I always thought he should play.
Yeah.
Is that Contact Boy?
It is.
Barry Pepper.
Barry Pepper is also one of the guys in the...
Starship Troopers?
No. Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
He was the sniper.
And he's his stockbroker buddy in the 25th Hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was he not...
He's a good actor.
Yeah.
He was not in Contact? He was, right? He was the leader of the cult?
No, that was Gary Busey.
Oh, that's Jake Busey. That's right. Sorry.
Yeah,
he's Barry Pepper's a weirdo, but he's not that particular weirdo.
Barry Pepper was an enemy of the state.
Okay.
Yes, he was.
I like Barry Pepper.
I think he's a good actor. He's got some. He could fit in with this.
This cast sounds very good.
Yeah.
So
maybe I'll try one of these Taylor Sheridan shows, which I've never seen one of them.
Yeah, you should.
Weirdly, I've only seen him as an actor in Sons of Anarchy.
Which you said he was quite good in.
He is good in
it.
You know what's funny? The character he played sounds like the kind of character who would be in one of his shows.
Oh,
I wonder if he had some input.
Probably.
Jeremy Irvine is not an actor I know. I don't know if you know this guy, Nick. He's been...
I mean...
He's... Now, I look at his list, he's like... He's known for War Horse and Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and Treadstone. Like, nothing I've seen.
I mean, I've seen Mamma Mia and I've seen Treadstone.
You've seen the Mamma Mia sequel?
No, I have not.
It's the sequel.
Okay.
So, he is... He is going to be leading the remake of Silent Hill. I'm not sure this is a good idea.
Well, so this is an adaptation.
Because of his casting?
Because Silent Hill has not adapted well in the past.
Well, do you know what the deal is with this?
No.
So, the guy who made the original, there's been two Silent Hill movies.
Yep.
The guy who made the original in, like, I don't know, 2005 or something.
The one with Sean Bean.
With Sean Bean in it. And like, I think among fandom, it's, like, either thought of as, like, okay or some pretty good. Some people actually like it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was always in the, it's okay, better than maybe some of the other video game movies, but not great. But it's all right. It's the same director coming back,
yep,
like, 15, 20 years later, whatever it is.
And he's adapting the second game, which I think is the one
right.
that people love.
Right. And kind of with a, at least in the, like, you know, his, like, sort of announcement thing about it. He sounded very, like, humbled by it, and he's like, I'm really going to do everything I can to deliver, you know, what the fandom wants from this, and, you know, I'll use everything I've learned in all that time in between. It's an interesting scenario. Like, broadly speaking, you're kind of right, Randy, and, like, it's like, yeah, well, can they pull it off? Probably not.
But, or have, like, we entered the limelight of the video game adaptation and it's going to be...
The Last of Us break it all out.
But, like, does this guy... Can his skill... Like, it's not like I watched the first one and I was like, this was, like, an artistic statement that didn't quite get it right. I'm like... it was more like this guy is a medium director who may never be above medium.
Now I have to look at what else he's done and if his... If
he like a French director or something like that?
I thought he was, but...
But yeah, it's anyway, there's an interesting story behind it. The second Silent Hill movie, I think, was generally considered crap, and he didn't have anything to do with that one.
The revelation.
But I think in the fan community, I think it's generally considered a good thing that this guy is coming back.
Okay.
They liked it, the first one, enough... to think that he's got a shot at a good reinvention of the franchise.
Hold on.
Now, I don't know, by the way, the actor you just named, I don't know who that is.
I don't know him either. I don't recognize him.
Okay, well, I will say that this director did direct Brotherhood of the Wolf. So
that's the guy.
I mean, yeah. That is not nothing.
So he is a French director. By the way, that movie, my understanding was at the time, and maybe still is, was the eighth most expensive French movie ever made. They don't do a lot of the big budget action adventure sort of thing, which that ultimately was.
No, most of their movies are people smoking and talking in French.
But I believe it was also maybe like their highest grossing movie, you know, their Avatar. So that's interesting that he should be tapped.
I will also say he has not directed anything since 2014, so that is interesting. Interesting.
Anything American or anything at all?
Well, his IMDb page, the last thing he did was a Beauty and the Beast adaptation for France in 2014.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We don't know if that has it. That's probably like its own take on Beauty and the Beast, not like the Disney one or anything.
Probably so.
Anyway, Nick, do you know who that actor is, whoever the lead is?
No, and Randy looked him up. He was in Mamma Mia and a couple of other things. Okay. He's definitely prolific.
I guess I'd say this, Randy. Like, there's enough going on that I'm, like, going to kind of keep an eye on it.
Okay, all right. This next bit of news, we have to cover all things Twister-related.
Yes.
So they have cast the lead, Daisy Edgar-Jones, who was in Normal People and Where the Crawdads Sing.
Yep.
Haven't seen either one.
I have seen Where the Crawdads Sing. It may have been the worst movie I watched last year. Not for her. She was fine in it, but just the movie itself.
Okay.
She was also in one of the kind of surprise hits from last year, which she was in Fresh.
Okay.
And she was great in that. And she was also great in Under the Banner of Heaven, which was a TV show.
Okay.
So she could be good in a Duck Tornado movie?
Apparently she was also in RRR.
Oh. Huh. I wonder if she wasn't that.
I don't know. But I like her. She can hold her own, and she's a great actress. So I think it's kind of a perfect fit for... I think they're going for what? Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton's daughter? Isn't that what the...
Oh, that would make sense.
So, yeah, I'm all for it.
Well, the important thing is Twister's getting a sequel.
What's the sequel's name? It's
Twisters.
Twisters, yeah,
yes,
of course.
It's, that follows the model of Alien and Aliens, Twister, so it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Aliens is like the best sequel ever made.
And then Twister 3 is going to be bad.
Directed, and then Twister 3 is going to be bad.
Directed by Lee Isaac Chung.
I don't know who that is.
I believe he was the guy who did Minari? Yes.
Okay.
Who also just directed the last episode of Mandalorian.
Oh, all right.
Twister 2 seems like something that could easily go wildly wrong, but I suspect there will be enough forces at work that it will come out at least solid. If it could be good, that'd be neat.
Yeah.
Twister is one of the most watchable, slightly bad movies I know.
Hopefully Spielberg will continue to produce.
Yeah, it should. By the way, the first movie had multiple Twisters. Like, it already was probably Twisters. Just saying.
It had sisters.
Yes. Twister sisters. They're back now. They're back and they want revenge.
Yeah.
The one that killed Ellen Hunt's parents has come back.
Like Jaws, it is hunting her.
And the Daniels, who just won a whole bunch of awards for Everything Everywhere All at Once, are going to be directing an episode of Star Wars Skeleton Crew.
Yeah, and I had to like look and see, remind myself even what that was. It sounds to me like Star Wars Prodigy,
basically.
Yes, that's right. For those who've been, and that's what I thought of too. For those who've watched the Star Trek animated show Prodigy, it is about like a group of like kind of teenagers that end up with a starship, a prototype starship of their own, and it's about their adventures.
But the big thing about this is live action; it's not cartoon.
Oh, it's not for children. It's not for babies.
Correct. It's not for babies.
And it stars Jude Law.
But that's a pretty good get for them, even though it's like, you know, just like thing, maybe guest directing. But that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Jude Law is good. You know, I wish all the Disney Plus Star Wars shows well. They seems to be certainly kind of like the, at least for me, like the Marvel the movies, in the sense that the shows are kind of where it's at right now.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, that's a good segue for us to talk about The Mandalorian.
Okay.
Because The Mandalorian is three episodes in.
Yeah, we're just going to kind of like check back in on it.
A little bit of spoiler warning, if you haven't been watching, there's some stuff that's happened. We might spoil some stuff.
Yeah. So, I think broadly speaking, we're liking this. The
I think
second
we all like
season,
it. We like different parts
or
of it.
Third season, right? Yeah. But yeah, do it. So the spoiler warning, we're gonna talk about some spoiler stuff.
Yep.
Okay, so three episodes in, I know we've had some disagreements over what's good and what's not good,
right?
But here's the thing: we all like Mando, right?
Yep.
I've seen some people criticizing the structure of it, which is like all Mando stuff. He seems to get like video game missions, mm-hmm. Like an RPG. Like he has to go on quests and sometimes a sub quest to get to the main quest.
The second video game quest was cool, going into the mines.
Right.
Of Mandalore, a.k.a. the Mines of Moria.
Yep, that's the big thing that's sort of like in these first few episodes is that he, because he took his helmet off in what, season two,
yeah.
I guess, he is considered sort of an apostate among the Mandalorians, among what's his specific group of Mandalorians?
Death Watch
Mandalorians. And the only way to cleanse yourself is to redeem yourself is to go and bathe in the waters of the, what is it?
Mandalore,
except that Mandalore was like bombed into oblivion by the Empire, so everybody's like, there's no waters anymore, you can't redeem yourself.
Well, it's also like supposed to be like the whole planet has been irradiated,
right.
And
you can't go down there.
And so in episode two, he goes there though,
and it's not poisonous.
It's not poisonous. It's messed up, but it's not poisonous.
It might just be that the Empire made some lies about the planet, and that's where.
Do we think that's a plot? Like
I do, because where the hell did all those TIE fighters come from?
That's true, but like, what value do they have in like? Do they just not want them to return to their homeland, or like, what value is there in making people not?
I think somebody's on Mandalore that people are looking for.
Oh, that's interesting. You think it's Thrawn?
I think it's Thrawn.
Yeah, what if? And follow me here. What if Thrawn is a giant underwater beast now? Thrawn was there the whole time. That was him.
Yeah, it's possible.
You are referring to the slightly cheesily named Mythosaur.
The Mythosaur.
I would not have named it that personally, but I guess that's in the lore, so
that's
it is what
lore.
It is.
Very Star Wars.
I guess. They don't usually... Well, the Star Wars usually has better names. The Rancor sounds cool.
Death
Mythosaur.
Sticks. Death Sticks.
All right. Well, that's like one reference. This is like a big important creature. Anyway, he does find the waters. There's a cool sequence where they go... through these spooky D&D mines, like dungeons and stuff like that, and little Grogu is with them and he's protecting him. And there's what all creatures?
There were
there?
Like, not like
oh, there's like some kind of scavenger men.
They look like Sahagin or kind of like
yeah.
Kind of
but
like
if you want to
people,
yeah, if you want to think about them, kind of in the same scary way that Tusken Raiders were in the original.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
And then there's alligator-like creatures.
Oh, that was not in the mines though.
It was.
Oh, I was talking about the.
Yeah,
I thought
the,
you meant
the
big
ones like
alligator.
In the sewer outlets and stuff like
yeah.
that.
There's also a weird robot. He just switches bodies.
Weird spider robot.
Yeah.
Yep. And
to eat people.
Ultimately, that takes down Mando, and little Grogu's got to go back to the ship. And does he like hit the coordinate buttons and stuff, or does
yeah.
somebody? Oh no, the droid.
The droid does.
Kind of does that part
He's got
for
the
him.
Droid, yeah.
But
he has an R5 unit.
But then instilled upon Grogu the need to. Know your star systems and star
yep,
charts.
Yep, he's, I don't know quite,
He's training him.
Yeah, I don't know what cognitive level he's supposed to be at.
He's like 100 years old, right?
Right, but he's still...
I think he's like 60.
But he still makes baby gurgles and stuff,
yeah,
too.
Maybe he's
so.
Bad at talking. Maybe he's a genius.
He did say his first complete sentence in this last one.
He did?
He, Den said, this is the way... Bo-Katan said, this is the way, and then he, in his own language, said, this is the way.
He did? I didn't catch that.
It was really cool. Sorry,
but,
it was a little cheesy, but it was a lot of fun.
I didn't notice that.
But anyway, Bo-Katan, who's from a different sect of Mandos, played by Katie Sackhoff,
yep.
And currently sitting on top of an empty throne because of various machinations and losing that saber and all
mm-hmm,
that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't really have much to do. And
no.
So when Grogu comes, she goes and she helps rescue Mando. And that sets up, a point where he is redeemed. And interestingly, in the eyes of the Death Watch, she is also redeemed. She was never part of them, but they're like, now you're part of us. And
I like how she's basically not comfortable. She's like, what? No, I didn't. Like, no, you had your helmet on. You went in the waters. You haven't uncovered your helmet. Like,
yeah.
You're a Mandalorian.
You're a Mandalorian now.
Yeah. And she's always been sort of so skeptical of them, which, you know, I want her to continue to be that person.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to see where they how they use that in the story. I don't know
yeah.
what they want to do with it.
Well, we love Din Djarin. He's a great character.
Yep.
But you do have to remind yourself, he is part of, like, this super religious sect of...
Right. They would be the equivalent of, like, some extremely orthodox religion.
Well, especially if you watch the Clone Wars stuff, the Death Watch guys were nuts.
Yeah, they were pretty bad. I mean, not all of them, but they were run by Paz Vizsla, who was insane.
Yeah. Until that John Favreau didn't John Favreau
yes,
host Paz Vizsla?
And, but then he is doing his he's doing Pre Vizsla, the big guy. The big guy. That's John Favreau voicing him again as sort of his descendant.
Yeah.
You know, until Din Djarin got fell for little Grogu and was like, "Oh, I can't turn him in." Which, by the way, he turned him in and thought about that after the fact.
Yeah.
He had to go back for him. I'm like, "Oh, well, like if all they care about the way is just like sort of their structure to their organization, but it doesn't have anything to do with doing the right thing."
Yeah.
Then I'm like, "Oh, I don't know if the way is that good."
Well, part of me I'm hoping that Bo-Katan has some influence or something happens where they are like he realizes and he's not dumb anymore. because I feel like Din is a little dim.
He is a little bit. He's a
great fighter and
consummate warrior kind of guy, but
bright. His character sheet, his intelligence is maybe a 10.
His intelligence might be fine. His wisdom's not great.
Okay, well, if you want to go
I think
that
he actually has like an intelligence of something like a 12 or so.
Wisdom of like an 8.
He knows some stuff. Yeah, he's even got a little cunning. But yeah, by and large,
his perception's so bad, and he always misses things. Also, he's wearing a helmet the whole time.
He's definitely an RPG character, though. The way he gets quests.
Yes.
But then you get the third episode.
The third episode, that story with him, them returning with the waters and stuff, kind of bookends it.
Yeah.
But there's a centerpiece that is one of those, like, whoa, this is came out of nowhere story about a character, very minor character from past episodes, but who was in a few episodes, I guess.
He was.
I kind of forgot, but...
Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, it was his technology that is going to go on and allow the Emperor to come back.
Right. He was a guy who was working for the Empire doing cloning tech stuff like that, specifically for Moff Gideon, big bad Giancarlo Esposito. But now that the Empire is defunct, he is in like a sort of New Republic rehabilitation program for them. That, you know, obviously has its similarities to when we sort of hired all the Nazis after World War II.
The rehabilitation thing is a much broader thing because it covers all Imperials. Like,
does it?
I that's what I understood.
I thought it was just more probably for officers and things like that, but I don't know.
I mean, and what do they do with the rest? They just kill them?
No, I think that they probably charge leaders with war crimes. I bet they're not prosecuting most of them.
Yeah. But I imagine that the rehabilitation thing is a pretty meant for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I imagine we'll find out more because it's hard to know quite where this story is going. But you do see this guy who's kind of like a nerdy scientist who... You get enough inside his head to see that he is sincerely trying... Like, it seems like he never felt like he fit in. He was always somewhat there working for the Empire under duress.
Well, he's one of the reasons that Grogu is still alive.
Oh, yeah. What was it he did?
He wanted him to be alive instead of just bring him in cold.
We can
get whatever we want from his dead body. And he was like, no, let's not kill anybody.
Right.
So we've seen
some moral stances from him even before his neck was on the line.
He spoke his mind to Werner Herzog. That's a lot. He's very imposing.
True.
And in this we see that he's like, you know, what he wants to do, he's in this rehabilitation program where they have sort of like a it's like almost like a dormitory thing for rehab people, and it's almost like you're under house arrest.
Yeah, and you have a work program, so you have an assigned like job that you do.
And he's doing kind of drudge work, a little bit like we saw in Andor, the guy who was the security guy, whose name I'm going to fail on. But anyway, it's not satisfying for him. He thinks he could do some good with the cloning stuff. Like he talks about how technology that was developed just a few years after what his mother died or something like that could have saved her.
Organ failure.
Yeah, that could have saved her. Cloned organs could have been a big thing.
Yep.
And so I guess we don't need to exactly say how it plays out, but the episode concerns itself with whether or not he's going to join another rehab person, sneak out, steal some tech, and pursue his research in his own time for his own good reasons, mm-hmm. even though it would be breaking the letter of the law, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go great for him.
It does not.
It goes arguably terribly for him. But what it's setting up, I don't know. Like, why that happened, I don't know.
The theory, of course, the prevailing theory is Thrawn.
I've heard that.
The other officers.
But, like, wouldn't they want to... If anything, wouldn't they want this guy back in the fold?
Not if he's redeemed. They don't want him if he's not...
If he's not going to believe in the
they
cause.
They want his technology, but they don't want anybody to know they have his technology.
Yeah,
that, I think that's what it is. Like, he knew too much.
Yeah. Well, presumably, the cloning technology is the thing that would, like, that eventually gets Palpatine back.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I think they'll follow up on that. There has been some question about how this connects up with the sequel trilogy and whether it'll have any influence. What I've been noticing is what seems like maybe some errors on the part of the New Republic or some bad management, I guess I'd say. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the rehabilitation program does have some weird limitations. It treats people as numbers, mm-hmm. And apparently can involve lobotomies, basically.
Yeah. Accidental lobotomies?
But otherwise, it's just...
They're not mind flayers. They're whatever they're called.
Right. On purpose, they're just meant to
All it does is just change who you are permanently.
They just mean to give you a little nudge. Just a little happy... Look how happy he was.
Yeah, look how happy he is.
When he was only on, like, level 3, he was super happy. He was chill. It was like he was on space weed.
But they also... this has been kind of a minor percolating thing. It seems like whenever the X-Wing guys show up, they are coming on, like, kind of like heavies, like papers, please.
Yeah.
And I don't know where what he wants to show with this. Does he want to show that, like, because they had a little bit of the imperial bureaucracy in them, too, that could, like, lead to the First Order to rise? Was it a splinter faction of them?
I mean, I think that's how I read it is, because, I mean, basically, they took over the Empire, and they kind of subsumed it in a lot of ways. They had to keep what was there because
they had all this infrastructure that the Empire had made.
Yeah, and they're definitely changing things where they can, but a lot of that structure is still there, and there are flaws in that.
Yeah, and but they haven't said too much of that in so many words. They haven't done anything to specifically tie it to the sequel trilogy, but I think ultimately they want to, and I think that's actually probably a good idea because Dave Filoni is good at the world-building mm-hmm. stuff, mm-hmm. and I might be able to patch some of that. But, all that said, and I think this is why you didn't love the episode, Randy, it's a weird thing to just drop in the middle of a Mando episode, as weird as it was to drop Mando episodes in the middle of a Boba Fett episode.
It's also this is the longest Mando episode that there's been.
Oh, is it?
It was close to an hour.
Yeah.
So, like, because they were kind of doing something a little more subtle with characterization, they just need a little more time.
So I will say, one of the things I liked about this, though...
Yep.
Is that even though it was very Andor and it's sort of like, let's look at the realities of what it would be like to live in a bureaucratic nightmare of the New Republic.
Yep.
There were at least aliens. There were glowing popsicles.
Yes.
There was it felt more like Star Wars.
Right. Well, they had arguably it was Star Wars more as suspense. Like there was a suspenseful train chase. Yep.
There was a robot. That was very Terminator. That robot is like the ticket-taking robot that just kept pursuing them.
Yep.
And the worst that was going to happen, they were going to get caught. They weren't going to get killed.
Right.
But it was bad enough they had to jump off a truck.
But then they did, they snuck around a derelict Star Destroyer, which I did think, I was like, I don't know if you can really convince me that there's not better security in there if there's anything at all inside that Star Destroyer of note.
But I mean, it was all, spoilers, it's all a setup.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The whole thing was a setup.
I guess that's true. I guess they wanted him to
She was pushing the issue and going to places where they knew they would get caught.
Right.
Because she had already said he's talked to me about X or whatever.
Right.
And putting the ball in motion that
he was a bad person.
Oh, 100%. Bad person. I mean, she worked for Moff Gideon. I mean, come on.
Yep. So
did he, though.
That's true.
But I think he was already kind of pushing back at times, so I...
Maybe she did too, Nick. Why are you writing her off so quick? Just because she had lobotomized our hero at the end? Maybe she slipped.
Also, maybe she's like, oh, I'm going to go turn the dial the other way and fix it.
Yeah.
She's just playing around.
She's just clumsy. Maybe she's like, I got you. I'm going to turn this off. Oh, no! Couldn't have gone worse.
But I have to say, I'm interested to see what they do in the next episode, whether it will advance that plot at all or whether we'll take a break from it and revisit it later.
I think it's going to go in another direction. I think this is going to be kind of...
You don't think they will revisit that for a while?
I don't think so. I think it'll be a couple episodes. I will say, this is only going to be an 8-episode season.
Well,
it's a very short season. Huh. This is a little sad.
They're already closing in on the halfway point.
Yep.
So does that mean that there's going to be another episode in the middle of Andor that's a Mandalorian episode?
Probably not.
I'm going to say Andor ain't going
to
let
it. Although, I know Favreau and Filoni said they're building up to doing crossovers with the shows.
I'm not sure that's a good idea. The Boba Fett thing really soured a lot of people on Boba Fett. Like,
maybe though, like if they're able to plan it as a more formal thing,
I'm happy with our Daddy Fett right now. So,
but we'll I want to see. You know, I am curious to see what happens with Bo-Katan, and I want her to continue to travel.
I
want to
know why she
Mando.
I want to know why she didn't tell Den about the Mythosaur.
Yeah, right. We didn't actually say that, but you know that sort of skull like symbol on Fett and all the Death Watch, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Mando's, like, this is the creature that inspired that. We hear a little bit about the lore behind it, and it's not supposed to necessarily be alive, like some epic hero killed it once upon a time.
Well, there's, like, prophecy. She saw it. There's, like, prophecy that the one who rides this will lead Mandalore, and I'm wondering if she's going to be like, I'm going to do that.
You know, I...
Ride the space worm, Bo-Katan.
I think she's not sure she saw it. I think that the vibe I got from her, the way she was talking about
it, Mando, if she's
like,
seen
she's
it.
She's like, did you see anything? I think she's like a person who saw Bigfoot in the woods. She's like, did I really see that?
I mean,
even
maybe.
We, the viewers, only kind of glimpsed it. It wasn't exactly like, oh, I know. Well, it was just enough to say, like, oh, it's the thing, I think.
Yeah, the vibe I got was not that she was, like, trying to poke and test him to see if she knew if he...
She could have been.
She's not sure of herself.
She might have been.
I mean, Bo-Katan, if we've known anything, she's opportunistic, and she's not a nice person.
Is she not?
No. She was a bad guy for Clone Wars, and yes, she occasionally worked with Obi-Wan and, you know, and all those others, but and Anakin. But
did she have anything that,
like,
reformed her?
The way they've portrayed her here, though, she has definitely been a little more...
Honorable.
The redeeming quality was that her sister was Satine, which was Obi-Wan's love interest.
Right.
But okay, if that's in there, yeah, maybe so.
I'm just...
I don't know. That my read on it, the way that she played it, I thought she was doing sort of a... Hey, did you see anything? Because I think I saw something, and I don't want to be crazy.
Maybe so. I feel like she's being opportunistic. But
Dave, Nick, you just don't trust him. You don't trust the woman who's clearly just a misguided Imperial in the Rebel Rejuvenation Program. Like, why are you so skeptical, Nick?
The only one I trust in here...
She's Bro-Katan.
The only one I trust in this show is Grogu. and Din, little bit.
Grogu...
Tell it to the frog people.
Yeah, I was going to say, Grogu is going to wipe out an entire species with the way he...
He's very hungry. Just give him the frog eggs. It's fine.
He is known to the frog people as the massacre of their people.
He wants to eat frog eggs and hug Babu Freaks.
Yes.
That's all he wants.
Yeah, he wants to hug him the same way that, like, Lenny in Mice and Men wants to hug things.
I mean, yeah, you're not wrong. And he can force hug them. That's fine.
What else we got, Randy?
I think Nick and I were going to talk about Shrinking just a little bit.
What's that? What is it?
It's a show on Apple Plus.
Okay.
It stars Jason Segel.
And Harrison Ford.
And Harrison Ford and Jessica Williams.
Yep.
And
maybe the best TV show on television right now.
It's up there. I don't know if I think Poker Face might nudge it, or slightly, or Last of Us, but it's up there. It's in the top three.
I can think of a few shows that I laugh at more than Shrinking.
I really enjoy Shrinking. It is
until it punches you in the gut with emotion.
Yeah, it's it's from the people who did Ted Lasso, so it's Bill Lawrence, Brett Goldstein, who plays Roy Kent, who's one of the writers. And it feels a lot like Bill Lawrence's other shows, especially Cougar Town.
Yeah.
And that it is about a group of sort of affluent people and their friendships. But basically, Jason Segel is a therapist, and his wife died in a car accident about a year ago. His teenage daughter, he kind of checked out on her.
Yep.
And he also kind of checked out on his job, where he works for Harrison Ford and works alongside Jessica Williams.
He basically checked out of life.
Yes.
I mean...
And this is him sort of starting to come back a little bit from his grief and become a therapist again, and maybe not doing things entirely the way they're supposed to be done.
I feel like therapists should be like this. I'm just saying.
I agree.
I
like vigilante therapists. I'm all for it. But as things go on, there's more of a story arc with Jessica Williams' character is getting divorced, and Harrison Ford's character, who has Parkinson's, and has sort of a strange relationship with his daughter, his adult daughter, and... it's just really, really good stuff. There's also his gay best friend who he cut out of his life.
Love
who's
him.
Gotten back to his life.
The engagement party killed me.
His neighbor, played by Krista Miller, who is Bill Lawrence's wife, who you may know from Scrubs or Cougar
Town.
She's
amazing.
Yeah, she's great. She is married to Ted McGinnis, who is also like one of the best sort of TV husbands.
Yep, and he is wonderful here.
It's a great ensemble cast. There's also the vet, the PTSD vet who takes
all of
house.
Jason Segel's patients are interesting.
Yeah, they are.
And some are one note gags that work.
Yeah,
and then there's ones that we see a lot of and sort of get to know. And I think at the core of the show is its heart.
Yeah,
it's human characteristics. Yep. And honestly, Harrison Ford is killing it.
This is honestly my favorite Harrison Ford I've seen in a while. Like, this is really good.
I mean, I feel like he's just playing Harrison Ford.
yes, a little bit.
But it's believable, and just his begrudgingly love of everybody in the show, but he doesn't have the ability to, like, really say it. Mm-hmm. He just will show it and then sometimes act really awful.
Yeah,
and
the engagement party was maybe the pinnacle of it all, where they gave him some edibles to control his Parkinson's stuff, and he ate too many of them and shows up super high at this engagement party. Meanwhile, the engagement party is the first
Harrison
party.
Ford knows something about that.
Meanwhile, this engagement party is the first party that Siegel's character has thrown since his wife died. And people kept coming up to him being like, oh, you guys were such a great couple. So he gets completely hammered, which interferes with him helping with the surprise proposal.
Yep.
In hilarious ways.
Yep, he may play the piano a little bit.
Yep. Yeah. No, this is a delightful, funny show on Apple Plus. And if people have... Ted Lasso just came back, so people are probably watching Ted Lasso. It's definitely worth jumping over watching Shrinking.
Sounds pretty good.
Yep. I think that's it for us this week.
Okay.
We will be back next week with more. Until that time...
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.